TV. 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 LK TV.
Wow. You don't ever get to do that again.
I add spice.
Not so
I'm a
much.
spice guy.
Not really. Maybe like cream of tartar or something.
I think people appreciate some variety in the theme song.
I think you've ruined everything, but that's just me.
I'm adding different flavors and textures. Like I said, spices.
Yeah. Your celery salt at tops.
Does that exist anymore?
Celery salt?
Is that an ingredient that people use
It's
anymore?
I still come across it in recipes, but they're old recipes, so I
Right.
don't
Is it,
know.
I mean, you're talking about like the cookbooks your mom left.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. I have no idea.
Let's investigate
We'll do that
the spice aisle.
off mic. This is LKTV, a podcast of the television.
It is.
And weren't we going to take this week off? What
Were
happened?
we?
Yes.
Was that a thing we were gonna
We
do?
were going to,
How come I don't remember that? And you didn't remind me? Because I would have loved to have taken it off the week. You know I love to take off weeks.
because I had an idea, and then you liked the idea, and we just leapt to it immediately. And I guess it makes sense because we actually had time to do it this week. So, since things are relatively slow and chill. Well, we're here
Now
now.
I don't want to do it.
We're here now.
I'm
It's
done.
we might as well soldier
I do
through.
have to pause in the middle of this, although I don't. You don't have to turn on. I mean, you don't have to pause the show or anything. But I've got something in the oven that
I
needs to
can
come out.
smell. It's tasty. Smells good, whatever it
You
is.
don't like it though.
What is it?
It's Jason's leftover kimchi rice.
Oh, but it does smell good.
Yeah, because it's delicious. That's why.
Great. I'm not a kimchi
I'm just
fan.
heating it up.
Okay.
It smells all spicy and kimchi-ish though,
It
doesn't it?
does.
It smells
It does
delicious.
indeed. So, the reason the idea that I had for this week was, hey, since we have some time to watch to do some binge watching this week together, since our schedules are both fairly empty.
Yours is empty.
Yes.
I'm being a housewife.
Well, okay, yes. Your work is never done,
It
true.
is never done.
But I had the time, and you also were able to make the time. We don't, well, neither of us have screenings this week, so that's another thing. So we have a little
I have
more.
also had screenings this week, but a voluntary
Well, that's different.
screenings. Yeah.
What I'm trying to say, if you would stop
Everything you're
interrupting
saying is
every
wrong.
word I say,
Everything you're
is
saying is
that
wrong.
you and I watched the first four episodes
Of
of,
Jessica Jones.
yes, I think, of Netflix's Marvel's Jessica Jones.
After everyone else.
Yes. They've already finished it on What the Flick. I had not gotten around to it yet, but finally
What's your
now.
name, by the way?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap, and I'm a film critic and TV recapper for What the Flick.
What's my name, by the way?
You're Dave White of linoleum-knife.com, and
Got
occasionally.
my top 10 movie list coming this week.
Oh, well, all right.
I want to write it out.
That'll be on. You're gonna put that on the site?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about the top 10 films of the year in a couple of weeks. This weekend, actually.
That's on the actual Linoleum Knife podcast.
Right, the podcast of the
Not
cinema.
on this.
No.
This is different.
This is the podcast of the television.
Perhaps you heard me say the word TV many times during the
You
theme
might
song.
have, yes. Anyway,
I sparkled during it.
this week's film show, which we'll do this weekend, we'll be talking about the worst films of the year with a special guest. But
I don't think I have enough worst films of the year.
Aren't you lucky?
Well, see, after quitting
Yes,
movies.com,
you
I
didn't have to
was.
go see Pan.
But I did go see Pan.
Oh.
It's terrible and stupid. But, like, I didn't see the delightfully horrible things. Not enough of them. I don't think I saw enough of those this year.
I think you'll have plenty to talk about.
I haven't seen The Cobbler yet. Maybe I need to watch
The Cobbler. We have The Cobbler on Blu-ray, and the Ridiculous Six is in Netflix.
Ridiculous Six because I came home enough. I came home the night you were watching it, and I looked at it for 4 minutes. And I felt like I was dying. So I'm not doing that.
Fair enough. No. So we watched the first four episodes of Jessica Jones.
Yes.
I'm digging it so far. I was a fan of the comic book that it's based on, Alias, and I really liked Netflix's Daredevil. And, you know, the Daredevil was a superhero show that was also a lawyer show, and this is a superhero show that's also a detective show.
I'm concerned.
How so?
Well, I like this show.
Okay.
For a variety of reasons, which I will soon discuss.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I watch it with you, these first four episodes,
mm-hmm.
and the more I stop you and make you pause the show mm-hmm. to explain what Marvel comics and superhero things I need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they toss these things out very casually for people who aware.
I think they're bonuses for people who know.
Yes, but.
But you don't have to.
I know that.
Okay. Actually, I'm the one who's pausing to tell you, oh, by the way, this is
right. My problem is, I already feel like I'm sliding down a steep cliff. I have a problem. This is a personal problem. With TV shows that make me watch other TV shows. And now you tell me that there's going to be a Luke Cage show. And that there's going to be another show where she and Luke Cage and whoever the hell else are going to be the detergents.
The Defenders.
The Defenders.
You don't have to look. These are the way these
standalone shows. These are, and then there's Daredevil. Apparently, that's in the same place. It's like the same universe.
But I
have to go back now and watch Daredevil?
There's been nothing.
You
in
kept telling me it was great.
I did. You should watch it because it's good, not because you have to watch it to understand Jessica
Jones.
Wouldn't
you tell me it was like super violent?
That too, which is a plus for you.
I like that.
No, I mean, Jessica Jones, at least in the first four episodes, is not structured in a way that you have to have watched Daredevil.
No, that's true. It isn't. I don't feel like I've missed out on
These are it's an interlocking universe, but yeah. I think, I'd say even more so than the movies in a lot of ways, they're very much independent of each other.
Well, good.
You know, there are occasional references to, like, the Avengers.
Because what if I don't feel like, I already have, there are already so many TV shows to watch. And I don't feel like I should have to go out and look at the TV Avengers or the Luke Cages.
You don't have to. You don't have to do anything. You could just watch Jessica Jones and stop right there if that's what you want.
If they make the Luke Cage opening credits the same as the Mary Tyler Moore Show opening credits. Maybe I'll be in on that.
Where instead of throwing,
although I like him, I like him as a character.
Instead of throwing a hat in the air,
he'll
throw some goon in the air.
The skill saw up against his belly, and you couldn't cut it up. Mm-hmm. He couldn't be hurt by the skill saw. Then he burned it out.
Yes, he's indestructible. Like,
that's a cool dude.
Yeah,
I appreciate this show as basically the continuation of Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. She's pretty much being the same character, only meaner and less intentionally funny.
But with a backstory.
Yeah.
We know why she's a mess.
Yeah. Like, because that's basically what's happening. Her neighbors all hate her.
Mm-hmm.
She's behaving a little bit like a bee.
She's difficult, but she's, you know, with good reason.
No. I'm being
facetious.
I'm goofing, but like, I've seen enough episodes of Don't Trust the Bee to see how that show actually has sort of informed her character. She's not easy to like.
No, and it is very apartment-based.
And it is super apartment-based. They're going from one apartment to another. to from her apartment to Luke Cage's bar, which is basically where he lives, and then
Trish Walker's and then what's her face's digs.
Yeah, her swanky place.
Yes,
and we are to understand that Trish was a child star of some sort.
Yes.
Not a superhero like in the comic books.
Right.
Well, we don't know.
Okay. In the comic books.
She's going to be one of the detergents, though, isn't she?
No, I don't know. In the comic.
You know she is.
She could just be like their well-connected, you know, media ally.
Maybe.
In the comics, Patsy Walker was introduced in like the 40s or 50s in a comic book called Millie the Model. That was... You know, it was aimed at girls. You know, this is back when comics were, you know, published for a broad spectrum of...
I like that as a comic book, though.
Millie the Model?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
It's a good idea.
So, you know, and Patsy Walker was her sort of red-haired, wisecracking best friend.
They should have one now about Linda Evangelista.
And her adventures as a jeweler?
Yeah.
that's a Sandra Bernhard joke. Anyway... Then in the 70s continuity, Patsy Walker became the Cat, who I think then later became Tigra, but I got to double check. I lose track. You can Wikipedia this stuff. But Patsy Walker is a player in the Marvel Universe. In the comics, she's a superhero. In this one, she is a former child star who is now a very successful radio talk show host in New York City.
Right. But then there comes the dude.
Kilgrave. Who was a.k.a. the Purple Man.
David Tennant.
Yes.
And all he has to do is say to you, wait, I'm going to try it. Get up and go take the pan out of the oven for me.
No, it's, you want to take the pan out of the oven.
You want to take the pan out of the oven for me.
I don't,
though. It didn't work.
So, no. You got to go take your own pan out of the oven.
What good is marriage? You can't simply make commands and watch the other person hop too.
Well, this is a Lucy Van Pelt thing, right?
What's the point of this?
I'll pause while you deal with
your parents. No, it's not even ready. It's not even ready to come around yet.
Yes, so we discover that years earlier, Jessica was in the thrall of Kilgrave, and terrible things happened. And since then, she has become a bit of a recluse and a hard drinker and...
an alcoholic.
Okay, fine. She's an alcoholic.
An alcoholic, but a functioning one who never seems to be drunk, even though she's guzzling entire bottles of wild turkey.
I imagine the metabolism that allows her to dodge bullets and, you know... be real strong means that, you know, she's not a lightweight in the booze department.
Well, you know Luke Cage can smell it come out of her pores, though, when they bang it out.
Well, he owns a
when
bar.
They're having their super sex.
He smells that smell all
the
time.
That is one of the things I appreciate about the show. Two superheroes having super sex.
And breaking the bed.
And breaking things and stuff. That's funny. The plot reminds me of that Japanese movie, Cure, about the... serial killer who mind controls people to go do the murders for him.
Wasn't there a Denzel Washington movie like Fallen or something where like
I don't remember.
But do you remember what I'm talking about? Where the bad guy is like some sort of evil spirit over and it hops from person to person.
Oh yes, that. I remember that.
I saw the trailer, I never saw the movie. But
anyway. I think I saw the movie. Huh. I don't remember anything about it though.
So yeah,
Julianne Moore in it.
It sounds like it'd be one of her when one
she's,
for them.
Yeah, when she's not doing, this is the thing about Julianne Moore. This is not about TV, but whenever she's not doing a classy
Todd Haynes movie,
a classy acclaimed film, and those are the titles of the films, classy acclaimed film starring Julianne Moore. She appears in the trashiest trash.
What was the thing?
The stupidest
what
garbage.
What was the one with Sam Jackson?
I don't know.
Where she's like the trashy woman who may or may not have killed her own child or something. I remember you...
Dirty Mommy or
I
something.
I remember you really hated that one.
It was, yeah, it was called Dirty Mommy, I think. I don't know. Like, she was in Seventh Son.
Yes.
She was the witch.
Right.
That's gone on my list for the actual worst, pod, for the movie podcast.
Fair enough. store that one away.
In a good way, though. Like, it was entertainingly terrible. Anyway, what were we talking about?
We were talking about...
Fallen.
Fallen.
Or whatever
yes,
it was called.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it is this kind of thing where, you know, there's a scene in the fourth episode that we just watched where a little girl is talking to Jessica and telling her all these terrible things that Kilgrave is feeding her. And then as soon as Jessica grabs her, she's like, ah, mommy, mommy.
Well, yeah, you're crushing the child yeah. with your superpower strength.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sure yeah. she's got kung fu grip.
Yeah. I appreciate the noir elements of of the production.
Yeah.
You know, there's even that sort of like boozy sort of sax music playing.
Well, she does own a, runs a detective agency after all.
I appreciate that it's entirely woman driven.
Mm.
And it was created by a woman too, right?
The original comics were written by a man.
No, the show.
The show, maybe? I don't remember.
The show was created by a woman. I like Kristen Ritter.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like the PTSD storyline. That's not something that gets a lot of narrative play outside of
war movies.
This show or war movies, yeah.
No, I definitely. And
what's... A lead character whose ongoing situation is...
Trauma
and panic and although she gets over it by being a real bee to everybody and by throwing them around.
But she doesn't get over it. I mean, like, she's clearly...
You know what I mean. She works through it.
Clearly unwilling to talk about it and that kind of thing. But what I like about this and about Daredevil is that apart from the superhero element, and we don't know yet in the first four episodes what exactly her powers were and how she got them. Beyond that, this is
an accident, she said.
No, her parents died in an accident. I don't think she said where she got the powers.
No, she talks about it with Luke Cage, remember?
He was an experiment,
and she said it was an accident.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Okay, sorry.
But we don't know exactly.
We don't know exactly what that means. In any event, beyond that one element, these shows exist in a very realistic world, or at least a realistic for television world. You know, like it's recognizably our own world. You know, occasionally you'll hear people talk about like that aliens invaded New York or that the Avengers fought them back or whatever. Yes. But we are not operating. We're not in the penthouse of Stark. We are like on the street level of this universe's Hell's Kitchen, because actually the real Hell's Kitchen has become, you know, like the rest of Manhattan, totally gentrified.
Right.
But, you know, the idea that you're in sort of the streets. So I find that really interesting. I like when you can take the sort of fantastical elements of superherodom and then give you more of a ground's eye view. Like there's a really, I think I've mentioned on the other show, I'm a big fan of a graphic novel called Marvels, which is all taken from the point of view of a guy who worked for the Daily Bugle, you know, just as a regular guy. And his job was to cover this stuff, but he was covering it, you know, at from the sidewalk, you know, at a human level. And that's why I'm excited about the prospect of this damage control show that they're doing for ABC, because that's a show that's literally about cleaning up.
Yes.
You know, so... I'm in. I'm excited to watch the rest of this
thing. I will watch this show.
Okay.
We'll see about what comes next.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I understand if you don't have time to go back and watch Daredevil. There's a lot of unseen TV out there, but it's quite good. It was, and like I said, there's a scene in the second or third episode that feels like, I mean, not nearly at that level, but it feels akin to like the big fight scene in Old Boy or something out of The Raid.
Yeah.
Where he's just like got to go through all these people.
You're speaking my language now.
And, you know, and the lead character.
You're just trying to tease me.
And
now,
on top of that, he's blind, you know, so it's pretty amazing.
We were talking about while we were watching it that detective shows cannot quit.
Oh, yeah.
Answering machines.
Right. Well, it's not just
physical photographs.
Yeah.
and newspaper clippings.
Yes. Actually, the answering machine thing isn't just a detective show. That's like movies in general love to have that scene still in 2015 of the person sitting in their living room, mad at someone, not answering their phone. You hear their outgoing message and you hear the person leaving a message.
Right.
Which never happens anymore. We've all got voicemail. Everybody has voicemail. No one has that machine.
I even had that. I have not had that machine with the little cassette in it. Since the early 90s.
Didn't we have one in Dallas?
Nope. We had voicemail.
Really?
Yep.
Even then, wow.
Okay. When you and I moved in together, we had voicemail.
You know what? I think I may not have enabled the voicemail box on my current phone. Like, somebody recently told me, oh, I left you a long voicemail. I was like, I didn't get a voicemail. Since we switched phones this summer, I think I might not have set it up.
Mine just sort of automatically started getting messages.
I should probably check
No one leaves me voicemails unless they're telemarketers.
Exactly.
Or like, city card saying, you're 3 days late with the credit card bill. Yeah.
It's funny that in movies, still with the answering machines, still with the physical photographs, like nobody ever hands anybody else like a drive, at least not in a detective movie. It's always like flap, 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 the, you know, these photos. And then, yeah, the then newspaper clippings, like, and somebody's got to come up with an interesting visual cinematic shorthand for looking stuff up on the web.
That's not interesting.
Well, I know, but it's at some point, you're going to reach a point where the audience is like, what are those things in her
it's
hand?
It's better to have a thing. It's better to have a thing than not a thing. A computer is a non-thing.
I understand that. But it'd be like, I'm going to play this song for you. Let me get out my Victrola. You know, at some point, it's just going to become...
Bring out your record player. Put your record album on the record playing machine.
I put a dime in the drugstore record machine.
That is a thing you can still do.
Nonetheless, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mean
lesbians.
Mean lesbians.
Real mean lesbians.
Yes.
I'm into that, too.
One of whom... Well, Carrie Ann Moss, who...
Is the best lesbian.
Yes, all the lesbians...
the meanest lesbian.
I worked at The Advocate during the Matrix years, and the lesbians were... LLCC. Lesbians Love Cool Carrie Ann.
If the lesbian television character community is a black and white cookie... One side is Robin Wright.
Who's not playing a lesbian.
Who's not playing a lesbian, but who dresses like one and has great lesbian
hair. Lesbian hair, for sure, yes.
And the black side is Carrie Ann Moss.
Well, the brunette side, anyway.
I make everything in the world into food in my head.
We need actual cool black lesbians on TV, too.
Isn't Viola Davis's character on How to Get Away with Murder? Isn't she bisexual?
I have
no idea. Isn't that what she is?
I know there's gay dudes on that show, but I never watched it.
I thought her character was bisexual.
No idea.
Roxanne Murder.
I do not know if Roxanne Murder is also...
A switch hitter. That's not her name.
It is not Roxanne.
We Murder. Just were hoping that was her name.
That's what it should
I've
be
never
called.
Never watched that show.
Me neither. It will only be disappointing because the first thing we'll learn is that her name is not Roxanne. The other lesbian on Jessica Jones,
is
Robin Weigert, star of The Good Concussion. Not to be confused with The Not-So-Good Concussion, which is currently in theaters.
The one you keep telling me to watch.
The Good Concussion from 2013.
But I've never watched it.
Yes, you should.
So I don't know how I can trust you sometimes. And here's what's going to have to happen. We're going to have to institute on Linoleum Knife, the podcast of the cinema, the thing that we have long discussed.
Oh. What was it called?
Make Me.
Make Me, yes.
This has been something, an idea that we've kicked around in our... background for a long time now. The idea of sitting each other down and forcing the other one to watch a film that we keep telling them they have to watch.
Right. Yes.
And the other one keeps saying, I'll get to it. You know.
Yeah. 2015 was the year I finally got Dave White to watch Real Genius.
Yes. That was a make me. I had a good time.
Good.
Which means it's your turn.
I see.
Like, you keep talking about concussion, but actually now it is your turn. The first make me for Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema, is going to be me making you watch something.
Well, you figure out what that is and we'll announce it on the other show.
We could do it tomorrow, in fact, because it's New Year's Day tomorrow and you ain't got nothing to do.
I have some things I have to do.
What?
Because I have,
you have some writing things. You have
some
to
writing
do.
Things and I and some school things. But maybe, but maybe we'll see.
We're gonna do it.
In the meantime, in between time, ain't we got fun? We also on Netflix watched the first
did we watch?
Episode of Making a Murderer.
Yeah, hang on. Actually, make the pause so I can take the stuff.
Because you're making a lunch. Hang on. Okay, so Making a Murderer, first episode, which in and of itself is already this sort of amazing story about a wrongfully accused person being sent to jail and all these sort of, you know, people involved who were gunning for him for various reasons. And that's just the...
And he was innocent.
Yeah, and he was innocent. And that's just the starter.
Right.
That's just to launch...
I don't even know what's coming.
The next part of the story...
where they're going to trump up some murder charges against him, apparently.
I guess so, yeah.
And I would like to... It is appropriate right now that we talk about the fact that you could have already watched all of these episodes.
Yes, and many have.
And you could have already watched all of the Jessica Jones episodes. I'm not doing that, like, ever. I cannot binge TV, and I do not want to binge TV. I can't sit still for that long, first of all.
That's not true, though, because you love a long movie.
I do. But I'm not going to watch a 9-hour movie in one clip.
In our living room, you won't. If you had gone to see Out One at Cinefamily, you would have happily sat.
No, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have happily sat. I would have painfully sat. It physically hurts to sit for too long, honestly. Hmm. You know, I mean, and it's bad for you as well. And the thing is that my attention in a day necessarily is drawn to about 13 different things.
So you're a flibbertigibbet.
A will-o'-the-wisp.
A clown.
I just can't do that. In a movie theater, a 4-hour film or a 3-hour film, I can do.
Yes.
Because I know it's finite. I've allotted myself that time to pay attention to that thing. Mm-hmm. But a TV show, an episodic TV show with 9 episodes, 6 episodes, 13 episodes, however many. I'm watching it at home where there are all around me in my peripheral vision other obligations, things that have to be accomplished. I get up, I go to the bathroom. I think, you know what? I really need to mop this floor in here. I get up, I go to the kitchen. I think to myself, what am I making for dinner? Does something need to come out of the refrigerator right now?
That's why when we win the lottery, we have to get you an office. An office that is somewhere else than here.
I have an office. It's this dining room table.
No. An office outside of this apartment so that when you go to that office...
Would you like to trade offices with me?
It's not the point. You'd still be in the apartment, and you would still be thinking about the apartment all the time. I'm saying we have to send you off-site so that
if you send me off-site, then who will take out the who will take the pork butt out of the fridge to bring it to room temperature for proper cooking?
You would do that before you left in the morning. You would figure out a way to deal with the major stuff that has to happen, but you wouldn't be thinking about it all day, and you wouldn't be breaking up your day into all these...
I'm not thinking about it all day. I'm just saying that I have other things going on in my life that preclude me from sitting my ass down on a couch all day. Right.
That's a failing. It's not something for you to be bragging about.
And watching... No, I'm not bragging.
Oh, you're totally bragging.
No, I'm not.
I can't binge watch a show.
I can't.
My special brain is so otherwise distracted with important things.
You're reading a tone into what I'm saying that does not exist.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time.
So the thing is that I just... It's not pleasurable to me to sit for a long time and watch episode after episode of a show. As you noticed yesterday when we watched three Jessica Joneses in a row, between each episode, I needed a break.
Yes.
I needed to go do something, clear my head of it. Here's my other problem with binging. I don't believe that most episodic television benefits from a viewer gorging on it.
I disagree. I'm not going to say I don't disagree with most
time,
but I think there are some shows that do benefit from that.
I like time to think about what I saw before I go back to the next one. When Mad Men was on, you had, first of all, you had astonishingly long stretches between seasons.
Right.
And then you had to wait each week for each new episode
to come along. Or any other show.
And that's the old way of doing things.
Now, when you were catching up on Mad Men on Netflix...
I watched them one at a time.
Really?
Yeah.
Always?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe I watched one every day for a few weeks, but that's still...
One. Well, I watched 8 episodes of Transparent last night.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Generally speaking, I'm not necessarily pro binging, and certainly when
I'm not anti the binge. If anyone wants to do that, you are welcome to do that with your life.
When Netflix introduced this whole 13 episodes at a time
thing, I just wonder who's cooking your dinner.
I would read online people going, "Okay, I'm going to watch all of House of Cards," and I can't fathom that sort of thing. Like I could do 2 or 3 or 4 at a time of an hour long show.
Yeah,
Transparent is a half hour show, so that's why I was able to do more of them. But yeah, I'd say 5 hours is probably my absolute limit. I think the only time I ever did 5 was the first time I ever watched The Sopranos. You know, right. The story where you know, I during season 1, I kept hearing it was good. I never got around to it. And then season 2 started. And right before that, HBO like did a marathon of shows. So I taped them
on VHS
on a cassette. And was sort of sitting on them, and then the night before the season 2 premiere, I thought, oh, I should get started on this, and then I'll tape the new season as it airs, and then I'll watch the old ones, and eventually I'll get caught up. So at 9 o'clock the night before the season started,
right,
I watched the premiere of The Sopranos.
Yes.
And then I watched another one.
And then another one, another one.
And then another one,
and
another one.
It's 3 in the morning before you come to bed.
Yeah. And then I got up in the morning and I watched all of the rest of the season.
Right.
And literally finishing just in time to watch the season premiere live. Because it just sucked me in so quickly. And so there aren't a lot of shows that are at that level of, not just that are that good, but that are that immediately sort of engrossing. You know, when I was doing Daredevil for What the Flick, and I think, you know, for House of Cards, which I think fell apart because we were moving studios and stuff, but I would do those in like 3 episode chunks.
Right.
So
yeah.
You know, I can't see sitting down and doing an entire season in a day. I mean, I suppose if you have to write about it, you have to write about it.
How many episodes are in a season of Transparent?
I think 12 or 13.
Is it a 30-minute show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like
you
I said,
watched 8 of them.
I watched 8
night.
Of them. It was 4 hours.
Last night.
Yeah.
That's still too much for me.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I did it after you went to bed because...
No, I know.
Because I gave up... That I think that was on the list of, oh, we should try and watch that. And I was like, I can't wait for you forever.
No, you cannot.
I
might catch up with
and
you.
And it's ridiculous that I haven't seen it up till now. Like, that's one
how,
of...
How was it? We'll get back to Making a Murderer in a minute.
Transparent's real good.
Yeah.
It's probably, I'd say, alongside like Tangerine and Carol, probably the most significant piece of queer media the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you hear the premise that it's a show about someone transitioning, that's just one of the storylines.
Yes.
Like the kids play as big a role, if not sometimes a bigger role on the show,
yes,
than Jeffrey Tambor's character does,
right,
of Mort, who's becoming Mora. There's 3 kids. The one is played by Amy Landeker, who was the sexy neighbor in A Serious Man.
Okay.
And she is married to Rob Hubel. They have two kids. And in the pilot, she reconnects with an old college girlfriend played by Melora Hardin.
Yes.
And they wind up hooking up. And she, like, over the course of the next few episodes, like basically leaves her husband to move in with her.
Oh, I see.
Then there's the middle son is played by Jay Duplass. And okay. He's a music executive, and he clearly has issues with his relationships with women, not in a gay way, but in a, it's as it goes along, it's pretty clear that he was involved in a sexual relationship with like a babysitter,
yes,
at far too young an age,
right?
Which he of course thinks of as being, you know, hey, it was great, it was every teenage boy's dream,
but right.
I think the show is sort of sneaking up on the idea of no, actually, you were essentially molested,
okay,
you know. And that's why now you have this weirdness in terms of the women that you go out with and,
right.
and the way that you perceive relationships. Although they've just introduced a rabbi that he might be getting, he might hook up with, played by Catherine Hahn.
Okay.
Who starred in Jill Soloway's movie that I hated, Afternoon Delight, but that's another story. And then the youngest child is played by Gabby Hoffman, and she is...
I didn't know Gabby Hoffman was on this show.
Yeah, she's the... She's,
oh, then I'm totally watching it.
You should
it.
Totally watch it. She's the one who is like, everybody could think...
She's great.
She's considered the smartest one, but she's the flightiest and can't quite figure out what she's doing with her life.
Right.
So yeah, so you've got them, but then, meanwhile, they're having to sort of wrap their mind around the fact that their father is becoming their mother, you know, or their mappa as
their other mother.
Yeah. Their mother is played by Judith Light, who is hilarious.
Okay.
She is giving full, like, Jewish housewife retiree.
Okay.
yeah, I it's just, it's smart and provocative and unexpected. And I really like the song choices. And of course I know so little about music. I don't know if any of them are tired or not, but to me, they all seem to
work. I'll let you know.
You do that.
Yeah.
You get back to me on that one. But no, I totally see where, why the hype and why everybody is crazy about the show. And I know a lot of people that work on it, you know, via Outfest. And I had watched the original pilot, which they then reshot parts of and recast one of the characters, I think. But yeah, so I because it wasn't a work show, I had not been keeping up with it. So now I'm kind of taking advantage of the break and kind of I'm going to try and zip through both seasons because it's extraordinary.
Maybe after I finish with Making a Murderer, I'll go to Transparent. Okay.
Well, also playing a significant role is our friend Sean's friend, Alexander Billings.
But we know her-ish.
Well, you've been on stage with her. I think I probably met her.
It's true. I was on stage with
you
her.
You made pancakes.
I made pancakes in a skillet while she pretended to be Katharine Hepburn.
Yes. Ah, the theater.
That was a weird evening.
To say the least.
I was part of some kind of performance. Which my job was to make pancakes in front of an audience.
Yeah, it's quite a few of sort of the trans all-stars have been popping up on this show. Like, she's on it. Ian Harvey, who's a stand-up comedian, plays this teaching assistant that the Gabby Hoffman character gets involved with. Yeah, it's a fun show. It's a smart show. I think you'd dig it.
Well, all right.
Okay, Making a Murderer.
Making a Murderer.
You're a way bigger fan of true crime stuff than I am.
Like, yeah, I love it.
I never listened to Serial, did you?
I did not.
Okay.
No. We're the only podcast. I'm sorry. Sorry, all other podcasts.
Well, I loved that Serial.
We're the only one.
Serial was the kind of hit with the kind of audience where you would see these articles explaining, what is a podcast?
Yes.
How do I listen to
right.
one? Apparently, only 1 in 3 Americans have ever listened to a podcast.
That many?
That's, I read that somewhere. I don't know if it's true.
Seriously? A third of the country has listened to a podcast? Mm-hmm. That strikes me as a huge amount of people.
Well, I think that, you know, there are...
Because I mostly run into people... If they are over 40,
uh-huh.
I run into people who are like, I don't understand what a podcast is.
But you know,
still.
But here's the thing, though. I think podcasts, like I was saying before about comic books, and they were really aimed at a broad audience, and there were titles to appeal to just about everybody. The way it is in Japan now,
right?
Like for example, there are people in my family who listen to knitting podcasts.
There are. That's true. No, and, I knew about
I'm
that.
I'm sure their desire to listen to get information about knitting is what got them over the hump of what's a podcast.
Yeah.
So I think that for a lot of folks, whether it's sports or Star Wars or whatever, if they really want to know something, or they really want to hear that Mark Maron interview with Barack Obama, you know, they figure it out.
I did listen to that.
I
listen to Modern Art Notes. I listen to Bim Bam Bam. I do listen to other podcasts. But, you know, this is the only one you need to care about. This and that other one we do.
Us first.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
Our empire.
So, okay. Making a Murderer.
As we begin discussing it for the third time.
Yes.
In this
I show. Mean it this time. Making a Murderer.
Well, like I said, I've only seen one episode.
Right.
Which led me down the tangent of I don't binge.
Yes.
Unless I'm forced by you, like yesterday. And,
that was the idea that led to us doing this podcast, by the way.
I am.
Let's start binge watching Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And you said yes.
Yeah. I already love it. It's incredibly depressing for a variety of reasons.
And when we're done watching it, we can then go back and read all the articles about how the filmmakers fudged things, which are already starting to pop up. Although even those articles acknowledge that, generally speaking, they got the story right.
Yeah.
Just there's some details that are...
When I see a show like this about real folks who remind me of
your kinfolk,
where I come from,
like Winter's Bone,
sort of, yeah. There's always that moment of, I didn't ask for this in my life today. You know what I mean? Like,
right. I thought I'd gotten away from this.
Thought I'd gotten out. They keep bringing me back in. It's a weird sort of friction inside where I'm looking at. It's not even poverty. It's people who are not educated, and so you know when you grow up around that. And you are expected to be that way yourself.
Right.
And then you either are naturally not or by virtue of your own sort of like...
effort.
I'm getting out of here. You know, whatever reason, you don't become that person.
Mm-hmm.
It feels, when you're in it, when you're near it, it feels like sticky octopus tentacles trying to drag you in.
Quicksand.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, no. If I hang out with this too much, I will, they'll get me.
You know? The suction cups.
Yeah. So there's always a little bit of that feeling going on when I'm watching a show about people who are essentially the same as all of my extended relatives.
It's like having a dream of being back in school.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to be here.
And that's an overreach. Not all of my extended relatives, but...
A heap and helping.
A fair chunk. Yeah. And at the same time, I have this instant empathy for those folks because I know them so well. I know what that world is like, and I know that the world is not kind to those folks.
Mm-hmm.
It places undue, like, harshness on them. It delivers too much harshness to them, whether it is financial, job opportunities not realized. They ain't talking right. Me and him, our English is just fine. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing that locks you out of the nicer parts of the world.
Sure.
So it's absolutely not shocking to me, or rather not surprising.
Uh-huh.
It's constantly shocking, but it's not surprising that even the authorities in the world go after those folks.
Mm.
You know, it's easy for a man like Stephen Avery to be accused and railroaded and just stuck in prison.
Right.
In the same way that it's easy for someone who is poor and a person of color
mm-hmm.
to be, you know, assaulted, killed, charged, whatever.
Right.
By the police. And so...
And in neither case are they going to have a kind of, like, fancy pants lawyer that are going to get them
correct.
Out of anything.
You know? Exactly. So it's... It is... There's a... The tension of watching that show with me is... When are the cops? When are the cops coming for me? Who did I make angry once, and now they're gonna like trump up a murder charge against me somewhere? You know what I mean? Like, because that's my personal background,
right?
A part of me is always living there.
Yes,
I'm always there. You know, I still have at least one toe of one of my feet in that trailer park. And that one toe is like, oh yeah, I'm real comfy here.
There's a can of Dinty Moor beef stew with your name on it.
This is where you belong, by the way. One day you're going back. And so
zip.
So the fear, the anxiety of watching a show like that is actually fairly
palpable.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I just love shows about killing and murders and crime and people getting caught, you know,
well,
or, you know, justice being sort of ferreted out by some, you know,
dogged.
Yeah. A person who won't quit,
mm.
you know, digging through the muck. I love that stuff.
What's interesting to me is that thematically, this is so similar to the Thin Blue Line.
Yes.
But formally couldn't be more different.
Right.
Like Errol Morris. And it's funny, you know, at the time, in 1988, when that movie came out, the idea that Errol Morris would do recreations in a documentary
yep.
was shocking.
Yep.
You know, it just wasn't done, and it was a violation of the nonfiction blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
now
yeah.
everything.
Oh, the nonfiction blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that, you know. But no, it was, you know, other documentary filmmakers were just appalled and you know, questioned his methodology and,
yes.
you know, how dare he. This one is, you know, there's enough stuff, you know, there's enough old photographs and newspaper clippings and, you know.
Answering machines.
Exactly. But there are enough, you know, interviews. There's enough things to show on camera that they don't have to recreate stuff. Like, that's usually because, you know, like, you're dealing with something where there is no footage and you're trying to visually portray it to the audience and you have to paper over some dead spots so it's not just a bunch of heads talking.
Right.
But in this case, it this feels more like a TV news magazine, I guess, but not in a bad way. I mean, it's supremely well edited and it's you know, they really keep the narrative moving forward, but visually I think it's very straightforward.
Agree. So I'm stoked to watch the next episode next week sometime.
At your leisure.
In my daily schedule of television okay. watching.
Fair enough. Elsewhere on Netflix, we did finally watch...
Maybe if Wendy Williams hasn't come back next week
from
the hiatus,
you'll need something to iron,
too. I'll need something to iron, too, yeah.
Elsewhere on Netflix, we finally watched the second episode
yeah.
of Master of None.
Master of None.
Brilliantly
funny,
oh
that show.
Oh, my gosh.
And this one was particularly relevant to you.
Yes.
And your... history, just making a murderer from
your background,
from my people, Master of None from
yes.
yours.
I mean, my parents did not immigrate from Asia, which they specifically cite in this episode, but they were immigrants, and the idea of like the sacrifices that your parents make for you in that. I mean, really that all parents make to one extent or another, but certainly in that case that they pull up stakes and they leave behind their own families and the lives that they might have had to come to America to try and make it and you know, to work extra hard to, you know, become successful. And, you know, it just, I mean, look, my parents are long dead, so it wasn't like, oh, I should call them, you know, but just watching it kind of made me, gave me a renewed appreciation for, you know, that can't be easy, you know, to like, okay, I'm going to go to this other country where they speak a language that I kind of know, or I'm going to learn on this, you know, on the fly, and because I want my kids to have more than what I've got here. And the weird thing is, if things proceed in this country the way they are, where we have a generation of kids who are not going to have it as good as their parents.
Right.
Are they going to start, like...
They're going to Denmark.
Yeah, are they going to Denmark? Are they going to Canada, you know, with the same sort of drive to, like, I want to raise my kids somewhere better than in the dumb old USA, you know? So the whole episode was about the Aziz Ansari character and his friend who's... What was the father from Thailand?
Whose father?
The friend of the Aziz Ansari character.
Taiwan.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and just their sort of mutual problems in dealing with their dads, but their sort of mutual realization that they should be nicer to their dads because of all the stuff they went through for them. So, but in all that, also very funny. And it's funny whenever I hear people complain about the show, the go to always seems to be Aziz Ansari is not a good actor, and that's true. I mean, but I think he is.
He's not. He's funny.
He's funny, and I think that he very wisely finds these roles that are within his wheelhouse.
Yeah, he's playing himself.
Yeah, so it's kind of like if you're a singer who has a really great six-note range, as long as you sing songs that are in that six notes, no one's going to know that's all you got. You know, so do I want to see him play Hamlet? Maybe not, but, you know, do I want to see him play these kinds of... you know, sort of fast-talking, narcissistic characters. Yes, I think he does those really well.
Yeah. Now, unlike the fathers in this episode who were reluctant to share their stories, and your dad was not like that.
Oh, yeah, no.
Your dad was a talking man.
He was a talking man. You one nickel in that jukebox and you could... dance all night. He would tell you plenty. He had an amazing story. I mean, he came to the United States for what was supposed to be a year-long internship at Emory University. He decided to stay, and in doing so, that meant he couldn't return home for like another decade because he was technically AWOL from the Air Force. And it wasn't until many years later when his two best friends in the Air Force, one of whom became the chief medical officer of the Spanish Air Force, and the other one became the Surgeon General of Spain, got him an honorable discharge, and he could finally go back to Spain to see, you know, to like, not only to see his own family, but to bring his family back there with him. You know, that was the year before I was born.
Dang.
Yeah, no, it's a heck of a story.
Why did your parents come to the United States?
Because
they wanted
opportunities, stuff. You know,
they wanted to do things here.
Yeah, I mean, my father could have just as easily been a doctor in Franco era Spain as he could have in the United States. But, you know, Spain after World War II was not the hopping place to be. You know, because they had sat out the war, they were also, I think, weren't really getting the Marshall Plan. They weren't part of the sort of general economic recovery that was going on. In a way, they were sort of looked as the last bastion of fascism in Europe, you know.
Right.
I could see where going to the U.S. and you know, being here for the post-war boom would be real attractive to somebody who saw what the alternative was.
Right.
And had he not, I wouldn't be sitting with you today.
You don't know.
Probably not. You never know.
Love would have found you. It wouldn't have at all.
No.
Yeah.
You see too many movies. Anything else this week?
Well, we're done with Christmas.
We are done with Christmas.
But I got to tell y'all, you know, I was watching the Great Holiday Baking Show.
Mm-hmm.
I made.
Oh, yeah.
If you watched the Great Holiday Baking Show, you might not know this, but they put all the recipes for all the different things that they made online. And so the last episode before Christmas, the finale.
The finale, as Heidi Klum would say.
The technical bake was that pastry chef judge guy. His name's Johnny something. I can't remember his name. His thing was, you're all going to make cranberry bread in the shape of a candy cane, drizzled with a peppermint sugar glaze. I made it.
Oh, on Christmas morning.
Oh God, I made it on Christmas morning. I woke because I knew you were gonna be up later than I. I get up at 5. Mm-hmm. You get up at whatever 8,
10:30.
I knew I had a good 3 hours that I could make this thing in, mm-hmm. and that it was gonna take approximately that long.
Well, you have to temper the yeast.
You have to. Well, no, you got to bloom the yeast, and then you have to make the dough, and then the dough has to proof.
Proof,
that which takes exciting. At least an hour.
Proof.
And then after that, you have to like roll it out. Oh, you also have to make the filling, the cranberry jam,
right?
That goes inside. That's easy because that's just like cranberry and water and sugar, and you just stir it until it. You stir it for like 40 minutes until it
thickens. Until it goos up.
Until it thickens up into a jam. But then that has to cool and chill in the fridge for like another hour. So it's a process. It's a long process. Yes. But I did it. I got up Christmas morning. I did all that stuff. And I was worried that it wasn't going to turn out well because, you know what? I bake, but not as much as I cook. And cooking is easier than baking. And then in the world of baking, things that with doughs that have to rise are the hardest thing of all.
Oh, yeah.
For me, anyway.
No, look, my mother, great cook, could never do bread. That was her one Achilles heel.
But this thing turned out really well.
Oh, it was so good.
It was so delicious.
And that pepperminty sugar glaze. Here's the great part. Oh, God, it was so good.
It doesn't matter that Christmas is over. I still have 2 bags of cranberries in the freezer.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep making this until we run out of cranberries.
That sounds great. And then buy more cranberries and then keep making more of it. I didn't even care that it wasn't shaped like a candy cane.
Yeah, I didn't shape it like a candy cane because that is a recipe for humiliation, having to shape a thing into some other thing.
You know, to be honest, just lest people think too much of your skills.
It was a lump.
On a TV level, there was a little bit of leakage.
Oh, there was a lot of leakage.
Yeah. Yeah. But
because you have to slice up the dough and crisscross it over everything.
Yeah.
And that lets the jam just ooze out.
You had a little cranberry escaping, but nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah, the people on the show, none of them had any leakage except for like one guy. I think the guy.
Uh-huh.
The guy that
I think so, yeah.
The guy that with the bear
mitts.
I think he had some leakage, and as did I. Cranberry jam was everywhere,
but so delicious.
But it was really delicious. Oh. If you go to my Instagram, not the Linoleum Cast Instagram. Mm-hmm. We do have an Instagram, Linoleum Cast,
but your personal one.
But my personal one, D. Leland White. You'll see a photo of the almost fully eaten. I didn't get a picture of it before we started tearing into it. Yeah. Anyway.
So,
here's a TV show story that has a happy end.
Yes, and we'll post the recipe on the
on our
Facebook page, which is to say I will.
I think you should be making it right now. while the idea of having something pepperminty
still has appeal. It's very, only a tiny bit of peppermint extract in it.
The tiniest of bits.
Flavor.
Which is why I want to keep making it, because I don't want to not use the peppermint extract.
Sure.
Like, it makes me want a whole bottle of peppermint extract now, and I have to figure out what I'm supposed to do with it that isn't this.
Right.
Because this, if I make it 2 more times, I'm still going to have like 90% of a bottle of peppermint extract left.
Yeah, that falls in one of those categories of like thing that you buy for one recipe and it's like, surely there are more recipes that use this thing, right?
And I think if you just drank it, you would probably die.
I suspect so. But your breath would be great.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a... What's your pick this week?
Oh, you know what? I don't. I mean, I'm still really obsessed with the Jennifer Aniston Aveeno ads.
Well, we... Yeah.
Like, the more I watch it, there's more than one.
Uh-huh.
The more I watch them, the more I think, is that what your life is really like? Like,
that you make your own smoothies?
She, first of all, she badly makes her own smoothies, but then she's also, like, she's has very tranquil sort of sitting times on her plush sofa.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing yoga meditation things in her little yoga pants and tank tops in a lush...
Everything in the room is sort of cream and bone.
A lush backyard. Like, I want to go... Jennifer Aniston, if you're listening, please invite me over to your house because I want... And not just because I think your husband's hot. I just want to see what you're... What do you do in a day?
I'm imagining
when you're not creaming yourself with Aveeno.
I'm imagining an assistant running
yourself
in,
supple,
taking the Aveeno bottle out of her hand, putting a smart water bottle into her hand.
She's got
and
the
then doing
smart water.
A whole other set of commercials.
Yeah. Her life just looks like it's made of soft things.
It's like her entire life is directed by Nancy Myers.
And I want to. It's not even that. There's just this like beige softness. going on.
Soft as an easy
And
chair.
She is beige and soft herself, I think.
My pick this week...
I may have a crush on her and Aveeno moisturizers and the couch.
And Justin Theroux.
And the... I wouldn't say I have a crush on him. I just have an admiration.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
My
kind between men.
Yeah. yes. Certain men. My pick this week is also a commercial, but it's a classic, the André for the holidays. Every time Christmas and New Year's rolls around, I just remember that ding ad from my childhood, which thankfully is on YouTube. And thus, of course, leading to the annual thing of, wait, what is cold duck again? which is basically like when you mix all the stuff that's at the bottom of the barrels with some champagne. Ta-da! Anyway, I'll post that one on our Facebook page as well, because if you are too young to remember the André for the holidays ad, it will blow your mind.
It's champagne glasses clanging to Carol the Bells. Bells. Yeah. We've discussed it before.
Really?
Every Christmas this comes up.
Yes, but we didn't have LKTV last Christmas, so.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
That makes this the better version, the
That's
better
right.
year.
So thank you for listening.
We're done.
Subscriptions will be coming very soon in the new year. So if you want to stay on the LKTV train at some point.
You'll like to subscribe to it.
Yes. And there will be other.
And it's going to be so cheap. You can't even believe it.
Yes. And then at higher levels, it'll be more premiums.
More items, more things, more excitement, more treats.
Exactly. But yeah. Of course, the main Linoleum Knife podcast of the cinema will always and
you
forever.
You keep poo-pooing the idea free. That we're going to be doing this very soon. And I'm telling you, I've been working diligently in the background.
I just said it
of
with
your life.
No, I said it with no.
You've been busy with other things, and I've been focused.
I just said shortly
with
in
my
the
laser.
I said
eyes.
Shortly in the new. Yes, thank you, Jessica Jones. I said shortly in the new year, and I didn't roll my eyes or say any or sigh or anything. I believe in you, Dave.
I know what you're like.
You do. Anyway, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Rotten Tomatoes show with Matt and Gray, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Schmoes Know, the Sewers of Paris, the Joel Ryan thing, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, Fat Guys, the Movies, the Criterion cast, Secretly Timid, and the Game Night Guys, and Film Spotting SVU. You can subscribe to this program for free at iTunes, and please leave us a positive review there. It does help people find the show. You can stream us for free at Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at LinoleumCast. And hey, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts about Jessica Jones or Making a Murderer or Transparent or whatever TV stuff you're into right now.
Or how great you think I am.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? We had letters and I forgot to send them to you. But oh well, we'll get to those next time.
Yeah. We weren't even supposed to be here today.
I know. We weren't going to be here last week either. We can't get LTK TV out of our system. What can I say? Anyway, happy 2016, everybody. Wishing you a really great new year, and we hope
filled with money.
Yes, and health and happiness and good
that
things
that you will use to subscribe to this podcast.
That too, and we hope we get to spend more time with you. So until next time, goodbye.